This is Blazing Trails. I'm Michael Revo. Our guest today, Yo-Yo Ma. In response to the coronavirus pandemic, Yo-Yo Ma started a Songs of Comfort hashtag on Twitter, tweeting that in these days of anxiety, he wanted to share some of the music that gives him comfort. And countless musicians from around the world have added their songs of comfort. So we thought this would be a good time to share a conversation with Yo-Yo Ma and Peabody Award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien, recorded at Connections in the summer of 2019. This special session touches on his two-year journey to bring the Bach cello suites around the world and how music and culture connects us and helps us imagine a better future. And we get to hear some beautiful music. But before we jump in, a quick word about WordPress VIP, who's making this show possible. WordPress VIP is the digital publishing platform that powers the world's top media companies, as well as marketing platforms for some of the best-known brands like Time and Facebook. Later on in this episode, you'll hear a conversation with their CEO, Nick Gernert. And now, here's Yo-Yo Ma, speaking with award-winning journalist and entrepreneur, Soledad O'Brien.
How are you?
Great.
Yeah?
Great.
You look great.
I'm so excited to talk with you because I have admired you forever.
More. Are we rolling on this?
No.
More.
And to know that we will talk today is very exciting to me, but I promised the team that I won't ask you too many questions.
Okay, it's a deal. I'll ask you a lot of questions.
Okay.
You've been busy. What have you been up to?
I played with my grandchildren yesterday. We had Father's Day, and that was wonderful. But otherwise, I've been touring. Actually, I've been doing something that I love deeply, because I have felt conflicted most of my life, saying I love doing certain things, I care about other things, the two don't go together.
Yeah.
So what I've started doing is putting all of it into one activity for 2 years, and that has made me emotionally and intellectually and spiritually feeling, no matter what hardship I go through, it's okay because what I'm doing is the right thing for me at this moment.
You're talking about your two-year tour where you are taking Bach around the globe.
That's right. So you're thinking, well, why is that special, or why is that different from what I've done in the past? Well, I don't know about you, but I don't know about any one of you, but whether you have bucket lists, right? Whether you think that one day I would like to do this. I'm 63, and as a 63-year-old...
Which is young, by the way, for
the
record.
I don't have that much longer to live in terms of chronology. So one of the things I do know is, as I get older, you care more about how you spend your time. And so I thought that the way I'd love to spend my time is to actually work in a way that I think music has always been ideally in my head, which is it's for everyone. But we know when we live in this world, there are all kinds of, categories, and we think in categories, we think in specialties, and it gets so sliced up that I think the very purpose of music or culture, things that we invented to give us a better understanding of ourselves and of our world, that should help us live. I started thinking, I want to actually go to everywhere and see and bring the best that I can do, and then talk to people. Talk to people to find out what they're doing, why they're doing it, who's actually making a difference in their place. Maybe it could be in the border area, or could be in areas where you're dealing with what's the thing that people want to talk about. And to really spend time doing that. And I think I've been more fulfilled. I've learned more since like the last maybe 11 months than I have in a really long time.
Wow. You kicked this off in August of last year. So you're coming up on almost a year of doing this. And you've been to more than a dozen locations. And I guess it's a concert, but it's far more than a concert. Describe for people this 2.5-hour musical session that also has a day of action. How do you pick where you're going to go? What are the 36 cities? Do you know them all?
Well, I think we know most of them. I think we're going to 6 continents, but we started in Red Rocks, in outside of Denver, which is one of those magical places. Red Rocks, yay! But we've done things in, in Cleveland, but then going into Youngstown, into Warren, and working there to understand the pride and resilience that people feel in areas that may have even become economically challenged or devastated in some cases. But what is it that they're proud of and what sustains them?
Are you bringing art there, or are you trying to learn from the people there?
I'm trying to learn from people there, because I just bring what I do, which is I play this instrument. The Bach suites happen to be the greatest music written for this instrument, and playing all of them is really hard to do, but that's not why I'm doing it, because I think it's music that can be shared with everybody, but it doesn't mean you have to love it. But I'm there to actually get to know people. So in Flint, Michigan, again, I'm making a place where people made things for 3 generations. They wanted to say, I don't want you to come and visit and tell us what to do or ask questions about our water, because everybody comes and asks us about water. We want to show you what we do here, that what we've built, and what culture has actually done to keep us together, and that actually makes us want to stay in Flint and not leave. And so those are some of the the places I really love going to, because I meet, and then there was a wonderful artist, Tunde Olanuran, who's a hip-hop artist, and I've met him, and we're going to work together. We're just going to, and that's...
Not everybody would say things. Hip-hop artist, cellist, we see an album in your future.
Does anybody have a problem with that? we're both learning, right? I mean, and that's one of the things. This whole Salesforce, the couple days you're spending is about connections and making connections with people that I otherwise might not naturally meet, but because there's a drive to think about, common purpose, social impact, we got along like a house on fire. And we actually did record a track together the other day, because he was in Boston, he was in town, and I think it's going to be a good thing.
I love it. So talk to me about the Bach suites, because they're notoriously difficult to perform. They last, your concert's about 2.5 hours. I mean, it's very intense and long. What message does Bach bring in those 6 disparate sort of suites?
Well, I think one of the things that I think that I love about Bach is that it's music that I have played for friends' weddings and unfortunately also at their memorial services. Mm. Now, how could a piece of music encompass both? You probably know music that can do that. But and I think music is something that actually, unless you want to say otherwise, I think music actually brings people together. It's a convener. So we invented music so it can bring people together. And I think Bach does it in a special way. I think of him as a scientist composer. Why?
Yeah.
You're looking at me like I'm crazy. I might be crazy, but I think in this case, there's something to it in that. imagine someone who is incredibly objective. Just looks at everything and tries to just lay things out, but he's also at the same time totally empathetic to anything you are that you feel. So the scientist part of him holds you at arm's length. The empathetic part of him understands you, and he, in his music, does not put himself in the center. He is observing, commenting. So imagine, that's, you know, in my mind, it's like a favorite uncle or aunt who does, who you could say anything to. But they will also say, you know, maybe, you know, when I was that age, I thought of this and that, and this is how I dealt with it. And you leave having a different perspective on the thing that you were concerned about.
I was a terrible flautist in school. So I'm curious, since I never really mastered Bach or anything at all, how do each of those cycles, how do they differ from each other? I mean, does each one tell a story? Is there a message in the first that's different from the second and different from the third?
I don't know if you're interested, but I'll give you some examples.
We're interested.
Okay, I'm going to play you 5 seconds of each suite, and you'll tell me what you think.
Okay.
This is the first. Okay, that gives you a sense of what this is. This is number one. Second one. Number two. Number three. Number four. Number five. Number six. So each one is, I think, as different in character. For example, this one. Once upon a time, I thought, this reminds me of nature. Infinite variety. Because, and it's the same, but different. And so, how can you code something that's infinite? I think Bach did it. In the second suite, you know, I thought, this is, you know, you feel always down. You try to go up, you end up going down. So, the whole piece, each of the movements go down. But you know, At the very end, after six movements, you have her. So you end up on a high note. So I think of that as someone that is looking for a bit of hope. So, you know, it's like the light at the end of the tunnel. You can be down and out, but at the end, you can actually make it.
How old were you when you started playing cello?
I was four.
What was the first song you played?
Well, actually, it was the very first thing I played for you.
That's the first thing you played as a four-year-old?
Yeah. And you know why? Because it was really simple to learn. So let me play for you the first eight notes. One, two, three, four, six, five, six, seven, eight. Okay, now, I play this note once. I play this note three times. I play this note twice. And I play this once. Does that add up to eight? It's over three strings. So a four-year-old, you can do. You can learn that in one day. You can learn that in.
You can learn that in one day.
No.
But we appreciate your optimism for the rest of us.
Look. Three strings. You just move your bow. You take a finger off and then you put it back again.
Why did you start playing cello?
Why? Because it was the biggest
instrument. I mean, did you have an interest or did your parents?
It was the biggest instrument I could play.
Oh.
I wanted to play the double bass. I was too little. I had big ambitions for big instruments. So this is, you know, so that was a compromise. I had to promise my parents not to go for anything bigger.
Did they know right away that you were a child prodigy?
Well, when they could see that the next day, just two notes that's different. And the third day, there are about 42 bars in this piece. So in a little bit over a month, I learned this whole piece. Now, that's not being a child prodigy. It's anybody can do it with a modicum of neuromuscular flexibility. It's true. You shake your head. I taught someone how to play Happy Birthday on the piano by numbers the other day, and it worked. Except I screwed up because there was one number that I was missing. But they did it, and he turned 60. That was his 60th birthday to himself. And so anybody can learn to play an instrument. But what's different is how you care about it. What you put into it. Because, you know, I had a teacher in college, a wonderful teacher, who said, Yo-Yo, you do okay, but you don't know what you're doing, and you haven't found your voice. I said, I found my voice. What do you mean? He says, you haven't found your voice. I'll give you 13 years to look for your voice, and maybe you'll find it. And I was thinking, what in the world does he mean by that? You know, I play the cello and say, no, he meant the way we talk about writers or branding or whatever, the identity of something that is that you cannot reduce any further. And that's the thing that you want to hold on to.
Did you know when you got it? Because there are people around you when you were very young who identified you as a...
The problem is this. I have a lot of problems. Some of the problems, I was really good at solving. You know, when I was seven, I could take something that was fairly difficult and I would be on the school bus going to school and I would solve it in my head. I could sort of imagine what it was like. So that's a kind of facility that's, you know, that's nice. But in college, this teacher said, you know, you don't know what you're doing and you haven't found your voice. And another teacher would say, you know, it's really, it doesn't matter what you do. It's like, what are you advocating for? What's the composer's voice that you're trying to understand? Are you, unless you can actually advocate for the composer, it doesn't matter what you do. You can show off, you can show that you're good, and you know, it doesn't mean anything.
We're going to take a quick break and bring you a conversation with the CEO of WordPress VIP, Nick Gerner. WordPress VIP is the leading provider of enterprise WordPress, and they power companies like Facebook, Spotify, and more. My colleague Matt Jaffe sat down with Nick at Dreamforce to discuss how his company is grappling with topics like the future of work, digital transformation, and more.
One of the hallmarks really for you at WordPress has been the open web and making sure that that is preserved.
Yeah.
Why has that been so fundamental and so important for you guys?
Yeah, the open and really the decentralized web, it's probably never been a better time to just have that conversation or state that, because I think what's happened is a lot of trust has been eroded around different sort of platforms that we all tend to visit and have become very influential on many things, you know, across politics and just the state of the world. And so that skepticism around those, you know, potential providers or those providers is kind of counterbalanced by the open web, which is not owned by any one particular corporate entity. And it's what WordPress has really been built into the fabric of as being that 35% number and growing around this.
The 35% number being what?
The 35% of the web, really, that is powered by WordPress. So if you go to a website, chances are 1 in 3 websites you're going to is going to be powered by WordPress, now north of 1 in 3. And that's also just aligned with this open web concept, because also no one owns WordPress. WordPress is owned by the community itself. It's foundation led. It's software you can go download right now. And it has empowered so many people to have a voice in a place that can have technical barriers to engaging on it. And from its earliest days, sort of what was core to WordPress was really democratizing publishing, right? Like, I want to bring this to anyone that wants to be able to interact here, not just consume, but actually start to have a voice in that. And that approachability is actually one of the things that's like really key to like what we bring to enterprises in this is like, let's take something that was so approachable and simple in its in what it could deliver. And I don't mean simple in a way that it's not capable. I mean like simple in a way that it's easily understood.
User-friendly.
Yeah. The thing that's actually really challenging, right? It's like the best design systems are often very simple, but it took, you know, years of hard work to get it down to that. You know, that's what WordPress represents. And that's what then we bring into organizations and saying like, you can take something that was simple enough to essentially be 12 times larger than the next CMS and bring that into your organization, and your users are going to feel empowered on day one to leverage this capability. And so, you know, that, and also from an organizational standpoint, knowing that you're building these things on the open web, when content is such a core component to what organizations are doing right now, that content is so important. And if you're putting that in opaque, closed systems, and you're potentially losing control over that content, like, That is materially damaging to an organization, right?
Yeah.
And so we're able to highlight the benefits of that for these organizations and saying like, no, this control, all of this stuff about how the web works fundamentally, you understand it, it can be core to the business.
That was Nick Gerner, CEO of WordPress VIP. To find out more, visit WPVIP.com. And now, back to Yo-Yo Ma and Soledad O'Brien.
So there's a difference between being technically good and then the expert level is being able to elevate what the composer was trying to do?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. But then again, it's about, so we spend many years learning how to do something. And I always say that the thing that we never talk enough about in music school is making sure that every person in the room is the most important person. Hmm. Who teaches that? you know, I never had a teacher to say, you know, if you cannot, so the teachers are saying, do the composer bit or play the instrument bit and make it fantastic. Show how great the composer is. But how about how great you individually are and how different you are? You're not a generic group of 5,000 people. You're each individuals, and obviously Salesforce is trying to get you to discuss things so that you feel there is a connection, that there's a connection that ties all of you together no matter how different you are and what different places you are. That's a lifetime of work. What do you care about?
When did you figure it out? And was there a moment where you said, Eureka, I have it. Well, I get the caring about it.
My problems go further. they go beyond college. Say, what happened then is we went to the same college and we actually compared notes, and there's one piece of wisdom that came out is that we both felt...
meh.
Like, yeah.
Love their college.
I felt like a misfit, yeah. You know, and obviously Soledad is not a misfit.
No, same. I felt the same way.
But the thing is, you know, we felt kind of like...
trying to find your place.
Yeah, but apparently a lot of people felt the same thing. So anyway, but my problems go further because I had two tiger parents, mm-hmm. not one. Two, add them. So my tiger parents said, you got to do music, and this is what you do. And I was four. You know, and I never felt I made a choice going into music. So I was always thinking I should be doing something else. And that something else is the other part of what the Bach Project is about. Is about actually, you know, the social impact of actually what strengthens people, what gives people hope, legitimate hope. And it's not playing Bach for them to say, okay, here's a pill for hope, you know. It's more like it's you have to know a lot more to be able to do what Peter Segal said this morning to some of you, says, you know, how do you find your authentic self? Goes back to Leon Kirshner saying, you haven't found your voice. So that is what I struggled with until I was 49. Because that, when I was 49, I'm a slow learner, figured out that I could be doing all the things I'm interested in and be a musician at the same time. Because music is one lens from which you could actually go and explore everything.
It wasn't either or. It was all of them and...
Yes, up to a certain point. Because now I feel I'm actually putting everything that I know to use for a particular purpose.
Do you have a favorite song that you'd like to perform?
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you whether you know this. Do you know this song? This song is Soledad.
It's such a sad song. It's so sad. It is. It's a heartbreaker.
And a wonderful guitarist who is Astor Piazzolla's best friend, Horacio Malvicino, taught it to me. He said this was, you know, Piazzolla was in the depth of sadness. Soledad means lonely, right?
Yes.
And he just, that just came out, and I wanted to.
I love it, but it's such a sad song. I always think.
Well, that doesn't matter.
What's a happy song? That's your favorite song. Let's call that one Soledad. Okay.
So, all right. So I will actually play for you something that that connects three people. Now, here it is. You all know who Duke Ellington was. And you all know who Aaron Copland was. And you also know who Gershwin was. Mm-hmm. Because if you fly on United Airlines... Okay, so you say, these are three American originals that, what connects them? So I would venture to say there's one person that connects them, and it's the guy who wrote this.
Beautiful.
Okay. So.
How do they intersect? Who wrote it?
So, all right. So the guy who wrote this piece, his name is Antonin Dvorak. He was invited by a lady, Mrs. Thurber, to leave Bohemia, the Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia, to go to New York in the 1890s to teach at a music school. Which he did for like 3 years. And that's the only time he spent in the States. He came to Chicago for the Columbian Exposition in 1893. So it's the 400th anniversary of, you know, the Columbus voyage plus one. And he taught students. And his students taught other students, and they were Duke Ellington, Aaron Copland, and Gershwin. And you know what he said to them? He said, don't do what I do. Don't imitate me. Listen. Listen to what is around you. Listen to the music of the musics of Native Americans, of immigrants, of everybody. And then you'll know what to do. And that's the future of American music. And it took two generations for that to happen. So it's, you know, culture operates differently than, you know, a specific business plan. It took 40 years to measure the gravitational waves and 1,000 physicists to do one measurement. 40 years. This is two generations. But the seeds that all of you plant is unbelievable, because it's, but you can determine what seeds you choose to plant as a parent, as your mother, who was such a great influence. You know, as my parents, as tigerish as they were, you know, they planted certain seeds that, you know, I rejected, and other seeds that I thought really they were worthwhile. So that's the long-term effect of what you individually and collectively can do, can connect generations and connect people of all kinds that are not part of your immediate necessarily, you know, grouping that we say it is.
What's the toughest piece to play on the cello?
Soledad for you.
What's a tricky one that's really hard? That when you master it, everybody says, that's it, you're an expert.
Okay, so here's, you know, and I'm not trying to be Pollyanna-ish, but everything is hard until it isn't. Everything is strange until you make it your own. And this is what I love about, you know, things like people who can tell stories and make me empathetic to the story you are describing. And this is something that I think a lot about. And then I'm trying to think of what's really hard that I can then, but so I need some time. So here's something that I think is really interesting about playing music. You can be very analytical about it, or you could just open your heart and absorb and feel. It's almost impossible to do both at the same time. One neural pathway shuts down the other. But yet, when you make decisions, or I make decisions while I'm playing a piece, I have to do both in order to make good decisions. I'd like to try something. So, since this whole hour is about, you know, business as a platform for change, and we're thinking about this, I'm thinking that one of the things that I've been hearing is that a lot of people trust businesses more as certain other parts of our world are failing.
Institutions are losing trust.
And that's right.
Business is growing in trust.
Which
yes.
is really interesting, because I would have thought that in culture, the currency of culture is trust, because it's about understanding. And it's common understanding that we can rely on, from which we can build things, whether it's in science, or whether it's in music, whether it's in the social sciences, or whatever it is, it's about building blocks of trust that, oh, I get it, you think this way, and you think this way, I get it, we can work together because I know how this goes. So as business is moving towards gaining more trust from clients and customers, and cultures, I think the fundamental part of culture is always about the creation of values, right? And if business is actually creating value, and we want politics to do that too, but I think a lot of people are very worried. And so what can we do? And I think Salesforce is a great company to actually start from the very beginning DNA, the 1-1-1 thing. That's really admirable. I want to do a 1-1-1 thing for me, you know, so that I feel like I'm being responsible. But I think what I'd like to maybe, you know what, I changed my mind. I'd like to play for you a piece of music that I actually played for the baptism of my second grandchild. Because, you know, again, it's an allemande of the sixth suite, but it's very multi-layered, and it has, I think, a lot of hope in it. So here it is.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for the conversation and also the performance. It was phenomenal. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Soledad, it's so wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
The greatest experience of my life.
That was Yo-Yo Ma and Soledad O'Brien in conversation at Connections 2019. Check out the hashtag Songs of Comfort for more music from Yo-Yo Ma and musicians around the world. Thanks again for tuning into Blazing Trails. We'll be on a break for the next few weeks, and we'll be back soon with more interviews from leaders whose opinions move us, inspire us, and make us think.
Blazing Trails is a production of Salesforce, a customer relationship management solution committed to helping you deliver the personalized experiences customers want, so they'll keep coming back again and again. Salesforce, bringing companies and customers together. Visit salesforce.com/learn more.